भगवते वासुदेवाय। ह्रीं असथासतो मृतिम् उथात्मनिये च भिद्धम्। विपनम् ऋतं स्मरन्त्युपाधिशन्ति तेथा अरूपिथाय। त्रिकोणमाय पुमन् इति विधाय अबोधकृता। त्वयि न तथा परत्र स भवेद् अवबोधरसे। जनन क्रिएशन। Socrates, who declare that matter is the origin of existence, that the permanent qualities of the soul can be destroyed, that the self is compounded of separate aspects of spirit and matter, or that matter transactions constitute reality. All such authorities base their teachings on mistaken ideas that hide the truth. The dualistic conception that the living entity is produced from the three modes of nature is simply a product of ignorance. Such a conception has no real basis in you, for you are transcendent to all illusion and always enjoy perfect, total awareness. We are continuing this purport from yesterday's class. Tasmatam samyogad achetanam chetanavibhad ivalingam guna kartritve pitata karateva bhavat yudhashina. Thus, by contact with the soul, the unconscious subtle body seems to be conscious, while the soul appears to be the doer, although he is aloof from the activity of nature's modes. Srila Vyasadeva refutes this idea in the section of the Vedanta Sutra 2.3.31-39. That begins Karta Shastrartha Vadvat. The jiva soul must be a performer of actions because the injunctions of scriptures must have some purpose. Acharya Baladev Vidyabhushan, in his Govinda Bhasya, explains the jiva, not the modes of nature, is the doer. Why? Because the injunctions of scripture must have some purpose, shastrartha vadbhat. For example, such scriptural injunctions as swarga kamo yajeta, one who desires to attain to heaven should perform ritual sacrifice, and atmanam eva lokam upasita, from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1.4.15. One should worship with the aim of attaining the spiritual kingdom, are meaningful only if a conscious doer exists. If the modes of nature were the doer, these statements would serve no purpose. After all, scriptural injunctions engage the living entity in performing prescribed actions by convincing him then he could act to bring about certain enjoyable results. Such a mentality cannot be aroused in the inert modes of nature.
Om. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 87, entitled Prayers of the Personified Vedas, Text 25. In the previous chapter, Shukadev Goswami tells Parikshit Maharaj a wonderful story of Krishna, who was then residing in Dwarka Dham, being invited to Mithila. Mithila, that area is today called Janakpur, situated in the Nepal country, just over the border of Bihar. Krishna responded to the invitation, and among several of his associates and great sages, like Narada, he traveled all the way from Dwarka to Mithila. When he arrived at the border, everyone came to greet him, especially two people, the king of Mithila, Bahulasva, and a simple Brahmin named Shrutadev, both with equal devotion, wanted to serve Krishna with everything they had. They invited Krishna to their home. Here in India, it's very common. People invite you to their homes. And sometimes so many people invite you to their homes. If you go to one, then you insult the other. And if you go to none, you insult everyone. And you can't do everything. But Krishna doesn't have that problem. He expanded himself in two forms. And simultaneously, he went to the king's palace, which was incredibly ornate, opulent, full of riches and luxuries. He sat Krishna on a royal throne. He offered the best foods of the best cooks on gold and silver plates. He had dancers and singers perform for Krishna. He gave Krishna the most incredible precious gifts, necklaces, precious gems. Meanwhile, simultaneously, Shrutadev just had a little straw hut. He didn't have a throne. He just had a straw mat. He put it on the floor, said, Krishna, please sit. He went out and begged for food and somehow collected some simple rice. He offered that to Krishna. And for entertainment, Shrutadev himself danced. And he had a little chatter that he was waving around. But for Krishna, he saw that both were equal offerings of love. Bahulasva prayed that, actually, I'm not a king. I'm just your insignificant servant. Everything belongs to you. and everything is meant for your pleasure. I'm just a very fallen soul, and his queen was saying the same thing, that you come just to deliver us from illusion. And Shrutadev, he also, with great humility, I have very little to give, but you're so merciful, you're accepting. Because the Lord is Bhavagrahi Janardana. He does not accept the physical things that are offered. He accepts the bhava, the love and the devotion, the sincerity of the purpose in which something is offered. And in that sense, everyone has the opportunity to attain the same perfection. If we are sincere, if we do not have ulterior motives, atapum biradvijastreshtas varna shrama vibhagasha. Svanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haditosha. Whatever our occupational duties, whatever our social status, whatever our ashram, brahmacharis, married people, retired people, renounced people, whatever our particular place in society, we all have the opportunity for the same perfection. If we understand one simple truth, that the real purpose of our lives is to please Krishna. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayajjati. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, if you offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit or water, these are things anyone can collect. You don't even have to go to a marketplace. Just to get a little water, somehow or other to collect a fruit or a flower. If it's offered with devotion, Krishna accepts it. What is devotion? Haritoshanam. That means devotion is not on our terms. Devotion is not just a fervent mood of doing something with tears in your eyes. Devotion means our motive is to please Krishna. And in order to please someone, if we're sincere, we find out, what does the person want? Tadvidi pranipatina paribrushnena seva. If we don't know what somebody wants, then we're not really very, if we don't explore to understand, then our will to please is very shallow. So for Krishna, he saw the chipped rice offered by Shrutadev the same as he saw the most luxurious preparations cooked in the finest ghee on the best plates. He saw Shrutadev's simple dancing. Doesn't explain he was a dancer either. But he saw that the same as Bahulasva bringing in. And he saw Bahulasva no less. It's not that Bahulasva's luxuries and opulence and richness and fame and power was a disqualification. Nor was Shrutadev's poverty a disqualification. The only qualification is our sincerity to please the Lord, and he's pleased with our devotion. At the end of this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami tells that for both Bahulasva and Shrutadev, Krishna becomes the devotee of his own devotee. That is his pleasure. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is telling Krishna, bring my chariot between the two armies. Krishna's Partha Sarathi, he's chariot driver. In yesterday's class, it was cited the story of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sri Rangam, where an assembly of the greatest scholars in all of the world who would meet in a particular place every day, one simple man was stumbling through his attempts to recite Bhagavad Gita and really not pronouncing anything correctly. And Brahmins in South India are quite concerned about how meticulously the pronunciation, the meter, the rhythm is what we recite. So why in the world would he go to such a place where he's really exposed as being practically illiterate? But every day he would go. Sometimes he was laughed upon, ridiculed, criticized. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he asked, this was very curious to see him, because the Lord is attracted to the devotion in a person's hearts. The Lord was more attracted to him than all the other scholars. And he wanted to show us through his question. Vedaham samatitani varatamanani chajana bhavashani chabutani mam tu vedana kashchana. Krishna knows everything. He's Paramatma within the heart of every living being. He knows our every desire, our every word, our every action that we're experiencing now and that we've ever done. And he never forgets. And he's personally only with you. We each have our own personal Paramatma. And we are his. But we can't be proud, because everyone is like that. But we could be grateful, because it is very personal. So why does the Lord have to ask a question? Why? He says, what are you doing? It's quite obvious. He wasn't speaking properly. So the Lord said, what are you doing? And he said, I don't even really know what I'm reading, but I do know one thing, that my guru told me that I should read all 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita in this courtyard every day. So to please him, I am doing it. Even though I'm so disqualified, and everyone can see that, still I'm trying to carry out what my guru asked me to do. Lord Chaitanya was so pleased, because this person was truly a humble servant. And the Lord asked, if you don't really understand what you're reading, then why are tears coming from your eyes? He said, when I think of Krishna, who is Parabrahman, the supreme absolute truth, cause of all causes, the source of everything, Ishvara, the ultimate controller. He's assuming the role of the servant of his own devotee. He's driving the chariot. He's taking orders. How the Lord loves his devotees. How the Lord is subordinate to the love of his devotees. That makes me cry. Sri Chaitanya said, you understand the truth of Bhagavad Gita. You are the authority. And then the Lord embraced him. And with that embrace, he invoked within the heart the awakening of the perfection of ecstatic prema, or love. Same time in Puri, Pratapa Rudra Maharaj was the king. And he decided, if I can't get the Lord's mercy, what is the use of my kingdom? If it's not pleasing Lord Chaitanya, I'll give it all up. I'll become a mendicant. But all the devotees and the Lord himself saw what an important service he was doing. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arranged for him to be the king, to remain as king, especially when he saw that in the role of a king, he was taking a menial role of sweeping the street for Lord Jagannath and the devotees. In other words, he was playing that role and accepting all the luxuries that come with that role, not to be the controller, not to be the proprietor, but to serve each and every person in his kingdom. The Lord was so pleased with him. Later, during the Rath Yatra, Lord Chaitanya embraced King Pratapa. Again and again and again. Not only did he embrace him, but as the king was chanting the beautiful Gopi Gita to Lord Chaitanya, the Lord was bathing King Prataparuja's body with his own tears. He said, "You are the most munificent. Who are you?" Now at the time, the king was disguised as just a simple mendicant. So what do you do when you're disguising yourself to serve the Lord? And you know he doesn't want to be with you when you're king. And he's embracing you and he's crying on you. Everything's going so good. Then he asks, "Who are you?" You cannot lie to the absolute truth. So he told the truth. He said, "I am king. I'm King Prataparuja in disguise because I wanted to serve you." That's not actually the absolute truth. He spoke what is the real truth. He said, "I am the servant of the servant of your servants. And my only aspiration is to be the servant of the servant of your servants." Because that's our constitutional nature. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. This is the first principle of knowledge that Lord Chaitanya revealed to Srila Sanatan Goswami. That our true eternal identity is that we are forever, by our intrinsic nature, the servants of Krishna. And to serve means to please. And what pleases Krishna? To serve those who love. He loves. And he loves everybody, especially those who have given their hearts and lives, even with all other opportunities and distractions, one who gives their heart and life for his loving service. Srimad Bhagavatam tells that by serving the great souls who have given their hearts and lives, Krishna is so pleased that he awakens the taste to hear about him. So that is our actual nature. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he began his kirtan in front of Jagannath during the Rath Yatra, He recited this verse, Naham Viprona Cha Narapatira Napi Vaishnav Shudra. I'm not a Brahmin Chachya Vaishya Shudra, not a Brahmachari Grihastha Vanaprastha Sannyas. Who am I? These are all designations. If we live according to the spiritual responsibilities of each of these designations to please the Lord, that's the path of perfection. But inherently, in whatever role I am, I understand that truly I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. Gopi Bharatura Padakamalayora Das Das Anudas. And that's the only way to approach the Lord of the Gopis. We can't just by our intellect or by our austerity or by our popularity intrude in Krishna's divine Leela. Krishna is the Lord of the Gopis, does not allow people just to attain it. But when he sees the sincerity in which a person truly is the servant of the servant of the servant, Krishna awakens from the core of our heart a taste to hear and to chant. And through that process, he reveals himself as Gopinath. So hearing this, Parikshit Maharaj was quite astounded how Krishna, the Parabrahman, becomes the devotee of his own devotees, becomes subordinate to the love of his devotees. He asks Sukadeva Goswami, how is it possible, if the absolute truth is transcendental, beyond all material designations, beyond all temporary, ever-changing material existence, if the Lord is inconceivably, indescribably the supreme absolute truth, then how could the Vedas describe him? This is a good question. How could you describe the indescribable? The Vedas give so many descriptions. But in the description, it describes that the absolute truth is indescribable. So how could you describe the indescribable? Shukadeva Goswami, like in so many of the great literatures of India and the world, he answers the question by referring to somebody who asked the same question. And that person answers the question by citing somebody who asked the same question. And that person answers the question by citing someone who asked the same question. Shukadeva Goswami describes one time when Narada Muni was traveling around the universe. He came to Narayan Ashram in the land of Bharat. At that time, just at the beginning of day of Brahma, the beginning of the creation, Narayan Rishi incarnated and went to this place, Narayan Ashram, Badrik Ashram, specifically to perform tapasya for the well-being of all living beings. Whatever we do affects others.
in a big way or a small way, but that's the truth. Everything we say, everything we think, everything we do affects the whole planet, the whole universe, the entire cosmic manifestation. Maybe a big way or a small way, but it affects. So Krishna, when he incarnates as Narayan Rishi, he's showing us how there's no greater activity, there's no greater purpose in our life than to live in compassion for others. He's Lakshmi Pati. He's the husband of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. He's residing forever in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. But when he comes to this world as Narayan Rishi, his purpose is to perform tapasya. It's way up in the Himalayan mountains where the snow never melts. And he doesn't wear, you know, very warm coats. He's just sitting in meditation. He's not even eating. He's performing this tapasya for the well-being of others. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells that if I were to cease from activities, then everything would be finished. Yadyadacharati sthrestas tatat evitarojana. Sayat brahmanam kurute lokas tadanuvartate. What great people do, common people are influenced by, and that becomes the standard of what's meaningful and what's successful. So this is a responsibility we all have. Srila Prabhupada told that the Krishna consciousness movement is to teach people how to be leaders in whatever role we're having. Mother, father, teacher, business, brahmachari, through our devotional lifestyle, we're meant to teach by our example. And that's a real leader. A real leader is not just somebody who gets votes, or has power, or has money. A real leader is not a person who just has incredible computerized brain that could remember so many philosophies. A leader is one whose example shows the light of truth to others in the world. What is that light of truth? To understand where the eternal, we are yajgitva napunaramoham evam yashashi pandava. Krishna tells, when you know the truth, you know that all beings are in me, are of me, and are mine. We are all eternal servants of Krishna. We are beyond birth, we are beyond death. And to discover that love and live by that love, that bhakti, that is real leadership. Because that leadership can transform others. And in the process of transforming others, we become transformed by Krishna's grace, because he's pleased. So Narayan Rishi, he performs tapasya, not for himself, but for the whole world, for every living being, for you and me. Such an example he's showing. So Narada Muni saw Narayan Rishi there, and he asked this question.
How is it that the Vedas describe Parabrahman as indescribable? It seems like a contradiction. How could you describe what you're describing as indescribable? It's a good question. Narayan Rishi tells Narada Muni that that same question was asked long ago on the planet of Janaloka, planetary system. The mind-born sons of Brahma, the four Kumaras, among great sages, were very deeply qualified, learned in Vedas, learned in knowledge, very pure in heart. They asked the same question. How could the indescribable be described? And among them, who were all equally qualified, how do you select who's going to speak the answer? Now, whoever's going to speak the answer is going to be in the scriptures forever. So most people would be tempted to say, I will speak. But for a devotee, Nadanamna Janamna Sundarim Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamaye Mama Janmani Janmanishwari Bhavatat Bhaktira Hoyti Kitvai. Devotee doesn't want these temporary flickering experiences, even if it's going to make you famous for the rest of the universe. Devotee just wants to please Krishna, just wants to serve, just wants to uplift others. How is it possible? This is almost as difficult to understand as describing the indescribable. How could we live without selfish motivations when it's just such an intrinsic samskara nature that we have? Put ourselves first, to put ourselves in the center. Param drispa nivartate. When we experience something higher, these things no longer are very important. When we taste the sweetness of glorifying Parabrahman, Krishna, that is so beautiful, because Krishna's glories are limitless. So our joy in taking pleasure in describing Krishna's glory, that joy becomes limitless. The joy of trying to satisfy our ego is actually the source of all misery. So all these devotees, they were very eager for everyone to be glorified, not themselves. So they selected Sanandan, one of the four Kumaras, to answer the question. And Sanandan described how the same question was asked by somebody else. Satyavrat, who was a great king, he asked Matsyavatar, the Lord who appeared as Matsya. And Matsya explained. And there was a history. How at the time of dissolution of the universe, the Supreme Brahman, or Mahavishnu, takes rest. And when it's time for the creation to manifest again, Mahavishnu breathes. And through his breath, the Vedas manifest.
This is something very, very deep to meditate upon. How important is our breath? Perhaps up until this question was asked a few seconds ago, you weren't really thinking about how important your breath is. But we cannot live without breathing. Every single cell of our body depends on breath. In the yogic process, we learn how when we tune into finer levels of the experience of breathing, prana, it awakens realizations, powers, what to speak of good health and peace of mind. So breath is so important, the breath of life. I mean, something we just cannot live without. It's the essence, very much the essence of this physical world is breath. The trees are breathing. Wherever there's life, there's a type of breathing. Maybe subtle, maybe very gross. Kumbhakarna was breathing. When he slept, he would snore. And when he would exhale, it was like a tornado. It was like a cyclone. It would just uproot trees. And anybody who was near him would just be blown away for miles. So they had to have a special place for him to sleep. And when he would inhale, that was worse. Because if you're anywhere within miles of him, when he inhales, you just get sucked into his nostrils, into his belly, and never come out. But even worse than that, because he was devouring all kinds of sentient beings, and they were all rotting in his stomach during his long sleep, when he would exhale, the fumes of all that rotting flesh in his body would permeate all directions. And even Rakshasas could not tolerate it. What to speak of vegetarian Vaishnavas. And who is Kumbhakarna? He's just a little asura. By our calculation, he's very big. But Mahavishnu, his exhalation is the time of the entire cosmic manifestation's existence. And his inhalation, everything goes into him. So through his breath, the Vedas manifest. Before he even creates the cosmic manifestation through his breath, he reveals the purpose of creation. Everything has purpose. And Srila Prabhupada, when scientists would try to describe deeper, more subtle, or more gross aspects of the universe, this creation is inconceivable. Just think about it. Even the most powerful minds and intelligence with the most sophisticated technology, we can't understand the subtlest thing. It's like every atomic particle practically has a universe in it. And it's so small, we can never get to the root of it. We may be able to see molecules and atoms, and then beyond that, we can only understand by effects what must be there, but you can't really see it. And then subtler and subtler and subtler and subtler. The Atma, the soul itself, when it's embodied within this material body, is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. Now when you go home, just look at the tip of your hair. 1/10,000th that size. And yet, what effect it could have on the world? We see demoniac leaders and great leaders, what they do and how they influence others. And it's all coming from that little particle. It's inconceivable. Cannot see the smallest of the small within a single atom. And then when we try to understand the universe with our greatest telescopes, how far could we see? There's limitless beyond imagination, beyond that. So material creation is inconceivable if we really try to analyze it properly. So everything is inconceivable. And what's most inconceivable is when we think anything is conceivable. Because it really doesn't make sense. So when even material elements within this little creation of ours is inconceivable, how is the source of everything that exists to be explained, to be described? So before creation is even made, the Lord breathes, and through his breath comes Vedas. What is Vedas? The Veda is Krishna, Mahavishnu, himself, telling us, before anything else, how I'm created, and most important, why I'm creating. This was Srila Prabhupada's challenge. You may be trying to understand how the world is existing with deeper, deeper depths, which is wonderful to understand how God is creating. But the most important question is why? That's not something most mundane scientists address. Why is it like this? Why is it even here? What's the purpose of creation? This is what the Vedas describe. Bhagavan himself, God himself, is revealing the purpose of creation, the purpose of life. There are three essential energies. Parashya Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate. The Absolute Truth has multi-energies, but they can be categorized primarily in three. There is the Chit Shakti, the limitless spiritual energies. There is the Bahiranga Shakti, the external, ever-changing material energy, and Tatashta Shakti. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Every living being is a part of Krishna, part of God. As a sun ray is in relationship to the entire sun planet, Krishna is the complete whole. And qualitatively, we are identical to Krishna in the sense that we are Satchitananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And our deepest propensity is to know God and to love God. Ananda, and to feel limitless happiness in that love. Quantitatively, we are a part, and the Absolute Truth is a whole. Janmadhya Shayataha, Vedanta Sutra begins.
that the Absolute Truth is from whom everything emanates. All material and spiritual worlds, Krishna tells in Gita, emanate from me. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. All material and all spiritual worlds emanates from me. And the wise who know this perfectly worship me with all their hearts. So the Bahiranga Shakti, or the external energy, is eternal. But all the manifestations within it are always changing. Birth, old age, disease, and death. So many transformations. This body, it may last 70, 80, 90, maybe 100 years. If you live in England, you get an award from the Queen of England if you live 100 years. But you might not be able to see the award. That person would trade that award for a younger body within a second. But inevitably death and rebirth. So material energy, everything's always changing. By the power of time, the sun planet is going to burn out. By the power of time, the earth is going to just be dust. And on the earth, all the oceans will evaporate. All the mountains will be pulverized. And what to speak of our little bodies, and our houses, and our bank account, and all the things we like, and all the people we like. It's all fleeting. So this is the Bahiranga Shakti, the external energy, where everything is changing. And no matter what we do, we can't stop that changing. Srila Prabhupada explained, even the wealthiest billionaires, they can't stop old age from coming. Even the most great rulers of armies cannot stop old age and death from coming. That's the external energy. But the Tatashta Shakti, the soul, is actually of the substance of the Antaranga Shakti, the spiritual energy. We are eternal, we are full of knowledge, we are full of bliss. We're a part of God. So the purpose of creation is for us to understand that the whole manifestation, with all of the miseries within creation, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosana, darshanam, birth, old age, disease, and death, they cause a lot of distress. Adiatmakadi, bhotakadi, daivaka, miseries caused by our own body and mind, by other people and other creatures, and by natural disturbances. They're inevitable. Why are these miseries there? This was Sanatana Goswami's question to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Who am I? Who really am I? And why am I suffering? The purpose of creation is that every jiva has free will. We can choose to love and serve God, to live in harmony with God's will, and be completely under the control of the eternal spiritual energy, which is the Ananda Shakti, the blissful energy of the Lord. Or we could choose to try to be an independent controller, proprietor, and enjoyer.
And the elements of material nature are just opportunities for us to try to be an enjoyer separate from our nature, our spiritual nature. And the miseries are there to gradually wake us up, to eventually question, what is this happiness I'm striving for in this world? When everything's going to evaporate, everyone's going to die, everything I have is going to be taken away, padam padam yadvi padam natesham, at any moment. Yudhisthira Maharaj asked Dharmaraj, in the form of a yaksha, what is the most incredible thing in all the world? And yaksha told him, the most incredible thing is everyone's dying, and all around you, you see, throughout history, everyone in history has died, and everyone around you is in the process of dying, and we see that, and we still don't take it seriously that I'm going to die. And if we do, we become all afraid. We try to block it out. But it could come at any moment. The Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken to Parikshit because he had 7 days to live. So it was very much aware, he was very much aware of his mortality. So he was seeking what's beyond. I only have 7 days to live. Really, what is the importance of my palace and my jewels and my wealth and my education and my power and all this stuff? Who am I? What is beyond death? So the whole creation is to facilitate people who want to enjoy separate from our eternal relationship with Bhagavan, with Sri Krishna, to have a chance to do so. But the limitations, the power of time, and the miseries caused by those by time are to show us that actually we can never be happy. Like a fish out of water. If you put a fish in the sand, even if you give the fish the nicest jewels, build a nice house for the fish, give the fish a BMW, the most beautiful female fish to lay beside him, or male fish if it's a girl. As long as it's in the sand, it's not going to be happy. As soon as you put in the water, he's happy. So our nature is atato brahma jikyasa, to understand who we truly are. We're eternal, we're beyond this body. This body is a wonderful instrument to serve the Lord while we're here. But if we think it's a place for me to enjoy independent of the Lord, then we're going to go through all kinds of inevitable tragedies, crises, heartbreaks, betrayals, miseries, death, rebirth, death. So the Vedas describe why the creation is here and what the purpose of creation is. Atato brahma jikyasa. When we see and when we experience and we come in contact, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva sastar koi, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. A moment's association with the sadhu is more precious than all the wealth in creation. Because when we associate with sadhu, with the self-realized soul, it opens up the desire within our heart to go beyond this creation, to understand who is God, what is my relationship with God, why am I here, and what is my purpose in life. Purpose of life is self-realization, the perfection of self-realization, prema pumartha mahan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said.
awakening of ecstatic love for Sri Krishna. It's within us. So Mahavishnu breathes, and the Vedas manifest from his breath. Now, usually you can't see breath so much, and you can't actually hear breath either. You could hear as breath is coming through, you know, various organs of our body, but you can't really hear the breath. Breath is so subtle. It's beyond the ears. It's beyond the very gross senses, although it's the support for all the gross senses. So by Krishna's arrangement, out of his mercy to everyone, the Vedas personify. They actually take forms. And each Veda has a particular realization of the absolute truth and is describing. And those personified Vedas, they by their own example show what their purpose is. With folded hands, they offer beautiful prayers to Lord Vishnu. And those prayers of the personified Vedas speak the various levels of realization that we can achieve through studying the Vedas. It describes how this material world is created. It describes how this cosmic manifestation is created, sustained, and annihilated. The Sankhya philosophy describes in great detail the science of the various elements of material creation, down to the principles of time and the subtlest form within the atom, to the unlimited spectrum of reality in the cosmic manifestation beyond this universe. This universe is like a tiny little mustard seed in a mass ocean of mustard seeds. It's incredible. And then it's describing various levels of realization of the one supreme truth who's the source of everything. Padanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yadkinam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. The absolute truth in this verse of the Srimad Bhagavat tells is non-dual, it's Advaita. But within that Advaita, there is limitless variegatedness. And that one supreme truth, the Brahman, appears as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes the highest, fullest realization of the Lord, which includes the all-pervading, formless, infinite light of Brahman. The Paramatma who is seated in the heart of every living being throughout the cosmic creation. The source of all is Bhagavan, the supreme unlimited personality of God. And different Vedas are it's specifically Upanishads are describing different aspects of that one truth. In today's verse, we'll begin the class now. Now we've given you a little introduction into where we are, but this will be a really short class from this point. There is the idea, because there are so many different philosophers, so many different teachers throughout history who are approaching the same truth from different perspectives. And one concept is that ultimately the soul is not the doer of anything. yatma. It's all material nature. Material nature is doing everything. And on one level, that's true. All the actions of this material world are due to the influence of the three gunas. Krishna tells in Gita, Prakrite kriyamanani guna karmani sarvasha ahankarai, that due to the false ego, we think we're the doers of activity, but actually they're carried out by nature. But at the same time, this is what's being addressed in this verse. What is the use of the Vedas? Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati varata? What is the use of all these avatars descending into the world if it's all rajaguna, tamaguna, sattvaguna, the material modes of nature is the cause of everything that's happening? Why the Lord gives Vedas? Why the Lord incarnates into the world? What's the use? And this is the heart of the Vedanta. Vedanta Sutra very clearly explains, Vyasadeva, the author, that we all have free will, that the jiva has free will. Yes, material nature is the cause of so many of the decisions that we make because we're so deeply influenced, but we have free will. We have the will to understand whether we want to live in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. We can't just blame the modes of nature. We have to take responsibility. If I get angry with somebody and slap them, and somebody say, why? And the judge brings us to the court and say, why did you slap this person? He said, I didn't slap. The modes of nature slap. What he'll probably do, he'll probably put you in the psychiatric division of the prison house. This person is crazy. You're responsible. Yes. If you just decide for breakfast today, I am going to eat a razor blade. Forgive this example. Swamis have different ways of thinking. So you eat the razor blade, and then you're in the hospital, and you're suffering miserably, and you're on the verge of death, and somebody says, why did you eat the razor blade? No, I didn't do it. It was the three modes of material nature that ate the road. We have choice at every moment. And specifically as human beings, atato brahma jigyasa, we have choice. We can inquire into, you know, what's happening in the elections. We have the choice of worrying about the monetary adjustments in the Indian financial system, which we have to deal with those things. We have to deal with this world in a responsible way. But our real purpose in life is not that. Our real purpose of life is to inquire, who am I? Who is Krishna? So the Vedas teach us that we all have free will, and the soul has free will. Even though we're being constantly tempted and put in fearful conditions and being influenced by the modes of material, we have the choice to surrender to God and go beyond this ever-changing world. And that's the greatest wealth we have. That's the true treasure of life that we've been given. Durlabha manava janma lobhya samsari. As human beings, we have the opportunity to make that choice. Sharanagati, to surrender to the Supreme, to live in harmony with the Supreme. So the Vedas are teaching this. And then it's teaching various aspects of the Supreme, and every aspect of the Supreme is indescribable and inconceivable. So how could we understand when we have these little eyes that only see what's in this room, and as we get older, we have to get thicker spectacles, glasses to see anything. We could hear, I hope you could all hear. We're very limited, and God is all great, and God is not material. How could you see something that's not material with material eyes? How could you hear something with material ears that's transcendental to material existence? This is the core of what's being spoken today. Because the absolute truth is unlimited and indescribable and inconceivable. And what's most beautiful about the indescribable, inconceivable nature of the Lord is the Lord has the power and the freedom to reveal himself to us. Sri Radha can reveal herself to us. The deity. Some people may say this is just wood or stone. But the reality is, if we want to approach the Lord to develop our love for the Lord can appear in such a way that we can see. This is part of the indescribable, inconceivable nature of the Lord, who has no limits, adhokshaja. If you say, because the Lord's unlimited and spiritual, therefore it's impossible for us to see him. But if the Lord cannot manifest himself to our eyes and to our ears, then he's not unlimited. Srila Prabhupada explains that way. That's limiting the Lord. The Lord can manifest himself through material nature to reveal himself to us and to give us a very tangible opportunity to actually serve and love. So the Vedic literatures are describing the indescribable with words that we could hear with our mundane little ears. And our ears are quite mundane. But transcendental sound vibration, if we're sincere, if we're actually seeking God in these great literatures, then God, yega tamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyam. As we surrender, Krishna reveals himself. It describes in Srimad Bhagavatam the features of Krishna. The Gopal Tapani Upanishad describes how Krishna has beautiful lotus-like eyes, and his complexion is dark like a tamal tree or a monsoon rain cloud. And he has a beautiful peacock feather and his beautiful hair. It's like silk, like black silk that's curled, circling around his moon-like face. His lips illuminate all directions with the color of a bimba fruit. His nose like a sesame seed. How he's standing in his threefold bending form and he's playing his flute. So academic people read that and they just make an academic study about it. But this is how people in India who study the Vedas think about God. And they get PhDs. And that's their realization. But if we actually approach in the association of those who love God, sadhu sangha. Lord Chaitanya said the sadhu sangha is the most precious thing in all of creation because it opens the heart. That it,
that company with saintly people. Shushu shosha dadanasya vasudeva kataruji syan mahatsevaya vipra punya tiratana sevana. When we serve great people, Krishna is pleased. And then when we hear the Vedas, Krishna actually reveals, he actually opens our hearts and gives us experience and realization of the indescribable divine realm by hearing the Vedas. Srinvatam svakata Krishna punya sravana kirtana haridyantasto hyavadrani vidunoti suritsita. When we hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam, these Vedic literatures, when we hear with an eagerness to serve great people, faith develops in our heart. Adoshadatta sadhu sangota bhajanakriya. In the association of great souls, that faith is nourished. And when we read with such faith, with a service attitude, by Krishna's mercy. And that mercy, that kripa, that daya, is the ultimate power in all creation and beyond. Because through mercy, premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena, through mercy, Krishna could reveal himself fully in the form of the deity. Where we're not just seeing wood or stone, we're seeing that this is God. He's revealing himself to me in this form. We could see the presence of God in the heart of all living beings. It's repeated in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and in all these great Vaishnava literatures that a great personality sees everyone with equal vision. Paddhita Samadarshana doesn't have friends or enemies. Because it's actually when you understand your own self, Krishna reveals how he's present in everyone's heart. It begins theoretical. We hear about it. And then we practice sadhana. Adoshudatata sadhu sangota bhajanakriya. This bhajana kriya, we by our sadhana in the association of sincere people, by hearing and by chanting, when we develop a taste for hearing about Krishna in this way, Krishna's so pleased that we're enthusiastic to hear about him and chant about him, and we're really trying to overcome our ego by serving others, Trinadapi Sunichena, and we're really seeking shelter in his holy names. Krishna responds through his mercy. In the Damodar Leela, Yashoda Mai tried to put the rope around Krishna's waist, but no matter how many ropes she tied together, his waist was the same size, but it was always the width of two fingers too short. Our Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the nature of those two fingers, what they represent. In order to really connect to Krishna, two things are required. One is the sincerity of our effort, how we utilize our God-given free will to sincerely, with enthusiasm, with determination, with patience, to try to purify ourselves, to try to please Krishna, to try to serve. And when we are sincere, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja, when we really are trying to surrender our hearts with sincere devotion in our service, in our chanting of the beautiful names of the Lord, then we attract kripa, we attract Krishna's mercy.
And through that mercy, inconceivable, limitless mercy, Krishna reveals himself to us. Sri Radha reveals herself to us. And then what's indescribable is describable by Krishna's mercy. So I tried to describe all these things. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Honor Prasad. Krishna appears as Prasad also. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So we have a very happy, please be seated for just 1 minute. So we have on behalf of the marriage board, we have a very happy announcement to make. So we have two wonderful grihasthas who, with the blessings of their parents, have decided to enter into the grihastha ashram. So may I request His Grace Sunil Rathod Prabhu to please stand up. So Sunil Prabhu was in the VTA in the year 2014-15. He had served over here for about a year. And he was very actively assisting Tulsi Priya Prabhu in the distribution of the Patmeda milk to the congregation. Been practicing Krishna consciousness now for over 5 years. May I now request Bhavika Mataji to please stand up. So Bhavika Mataji comes from a family of devotees, and she's been practicing Krishna consciousness for over 3 years now. And she in fact holds a graduate degree in commerce and a master's in economics. And she assists in the deity cooking seva at the temple very regularly. So let us all join together in wishing these two wonderful devotees a very, very happy Krishna conscious grihastha ashram life by loudly chanting 3 times, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.